The U.S. is criticizing China for not putting more pressure on North Korea over its weapons program. But China is also under fire for something else entirely, for censorship. The Cambridge University Press recently removed hundreds of articles from a Chinese website which hosts a leading journal on Chinese affairs. And that's because China's Communist Party threatened to cut online access to all the journals published by the Cambridge Press. John Pomfret was Beijing bureau chief for The Washington Post. His latest book is The Beautiful Country and the Middle Kingdom, America and China, 1776 to the present. He's with us from KQED in San Francisco. John, welcome back.
Thanks for having me on.
So first of all, tell us more about this case with Cambridge University Press. What exactly happened?
It seems that it's part of a deal to have more access, allowed more access for Cambridge University's materials in China, which is a money-making venture. The Cambridge University Press basically decided to block access to about 300 articles published in the China Quarterly. And they're about a variety of issues that are considered still in China very sensitive today. So such as the Great Leap Forward famine, the Tiananmen Square crackdown in 1989, the Cultural Revolution, the legacy of Chairman Mao, issues such as that. And these are articles written in English, but they're academic articles. And, you know, by their very nature, they have a relatively limited readership. Nonetheless, the Communist Party is very aggressive at seeking out any opportunity to censor different narratives involving their history than the official narrative approved by Beijing.
And so this aggressiveness, what was the response to that from academic circles, both inside of China and outside of China?
Well, particularly from outside of China, there was an uproar in the academic community where a series of scholars started petitions, which basically said, you know, you can't do this. This is just outrageous behavior to basically allow your stuff to be or to willingly self-censor your stuff. If the Chinese block your site, that's one thing. But for you to begin to take specific articles off the site that the Chinese have identified as somehow at variance with their ideology, that really moves into the category of facilitating China's ideological control over what its people can and cannot read. And so given this backlash, and there were petitions signed and a lot of op-eds written, Cambridge University Press buckled to the pressure and put the pieces back online and actually opened access to all of them for readers in China.
Interesting. Now, you know, these events that you talked about that these papers had to do with the Great Leap Forward and the massive famine associated with that, all the way to Tiananmen Square, I mean, these are seminal moments in China's modern history. Why would the Communist Party be so sensitive to these academic papers when it's not as if it just getting rid of those 300 papers would erase the collective memory surrounding these events?
Well, the party has always been very focused on the control of history as a way to justify or to legitimize its rule. And the Chinese view history not as something in the past, but as something that is used by rulers to control the present and the future. And so with that in mind, their desire to oppress, suppress, blot out alternative narratives of what actually went on is extremely high, especially at this moment. They're involved in a very serious political transition with the 19-party Congress, and they're also led by a leader in Xi Jinping who has railed against what he calls historical nihilism, which is basically the tendency of some people in China and, you know, academics overseas as well to question the wisdom and the wonderful rule of the Communist Party of China.
He calls that historical nihilism?
He calls that historical nihilism. If you write about the famine during the Great Leap Forward, where 30 to 40 million people are believed to have died, that would be historical nihilism. If you write about the Cultural Revolution, when 600,000 plus very highly educated Chinese were probably murdered by the state or by the Red Guard, that would be historical nihilism. If you basically dig up any dark secret of the communist regime's past, that's considered historical nihilism. And they've launched a nationwide campaign to crush this out. And this censorship activity and this pressure on the Cambridge University Press is just part of that campaign.
So these events, since they occurred in China's modern history, the ones that we're talking about, I mean, there are still many people in China who lived through that. I mean, is the government just sort of trying to erase what written aspects of this history and just playing a long waiting game until those people who experienced it are also gone?
Yeah, I mean, their calculus is that, yeah, they cannot suppress the individual memories of people. But what they can do is by limiting those memories to families and by denying those people the right to publish memoirs on the issue and by ensuring that it doesn't enter the classroom, they can achieve a certain amount of sort of mass amnesia. That's why, you know, people have started calling China the People's Republic of Amnesia.
What is your sense of the reaction from within China? I mean, do people, do they just are shruggingly accepting this, or is there a backlash from within China itself?
Generally speaking, in the academic community, they're aghast at this type of behavior. And the regime of Xi Jinping has really squeezed the intellectual classes in China very hard. In terms of the wiggle room for political debate, it's tighter than it was at any point in China since the 1989 crackdown on pro-democracy protests around Tiananmen Square. If you push back too hard, you could go to jail. You could lose your job. And so the party has enormous number of levers that it can use to squeeze people to ensure that even though they're unhappy in their positions and they really oppose the censorship, they can't do anything to stop it.
Mm. So, John, I have a question on my mind, which I have to think about the right way to ask it, because this question of the control of historical memory is not unique to China.
Oh, for sure.
Right yeah. Now, of course, in the United States, there is intense debate over statues, for example, that celebrate members of the Confederate South. Now, I'm not equating the two because, of course, in the cases of the statues in the United States, those are statues that are celebrating, you know, men who went out of their way to subjugate an enslaved population in the United States. And whereas in China, we're talking about papers that were written that are written in order to preserve the memory of the men, many who suffered and died under various Chinese political revolutions. So I mark the difference. But I guess my question is, are there any echoes here that we here in the United States can learn from what's being done by the Chinese government there?
When I think of the statues, I think about what the Eastern Europeans did with many of their statues from the Soviet era, which in several cases they just stuck them all in one park and turned the park into kind of a museum, if you will, to an ideology that had worn out its welcome in Eastern Europe. And that's in some ways, in one could say, a health. I mean, you could smash the statues like were done in several instances in Eastern Europe or in, for example, Baghdad. Mm-hmm. But you could also kind of, in a weird way, put them away in a park and just say, well, that's the past, and lock, you know, let people wander through them on a Sunday picnic and see what people once thought. In China, it was really interesting because after the Cultural Revolution ended in 1976, there was a whole spate of removals of the large statues of Chairman Mao that used to stand in front of almost any major institute in China. I mean, they make the Robert E. Lee statue look like a pawn on a chessboard. I mean, these things are 80 feet tall, right? There's Chairman, you know, with his hand up in a kind of semi-Heil Hitler salute. And a lot of them were removed after the Cultural Revolution. But then in very, very quickly in the early 80s, that the removal of those statues was stopped because the party bigwigs realized that they couldn't totally negate Mao, because if they did, they would actually be negating themselves. And that's when basically China's censorship, because there was this really interesting window of openness in China from around 77, 78 up until about 81, 82. And then it ended. And then the openness came back again in the late 80s. And then, of course, there was a crackdown on Tiananmen Square and it ended. And so China's had this spasmodic openness and closed rhythm since then. And I wonder if in the United States we're kind of going through that right now as well. Again, as you said, with the recognition that it's not smart to make false equivalencies about our issues and their issues. But nonetheless, there is a sense. And in very interesting ways, America and China's history kind of moves together in this strange pattern. Like they had their Cultural Revolution, we had our 1960s. During the Civil War, we had our Civil War, they had their Taiping Rebellion. And so from that perspective, you know, sort of the cosmic connections, if you will, between us and them, there is a similarity or a verisimilitude between the two places, which is something that I get into a lot in my book.
Yeah. Well, John Pomfret is former Beijing bureau chief for The Washington Post, and his latest book is The Beautiful Country and the Middle Kingdom, America and China, 1776 to the present. John, this has been absolutely fascinating. Thank you so very much.
Thanks for having me. It's been great.